Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knitter ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Lebara ist ja irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 Gigabyte für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd.
Lebara,
deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica is the place to go. Subscribe there if you would. We also have StuDoesMerch.com, shirts, mugs, stickers, and more. Stu10 is the code to save 10%. Pat Gray is here for a look at the Donald Trump second term. That thus far, the good, the bad, the maybe, I don't know. Chicago, where does that fall? We're talking about a National Guard deployment, and we'll look at the latest there. But we're going to start by doing the left's discovery of capitalism. Yes, they've discovered it. Who knew? They understand the benefits of capitalism suddenly. And why do they understand it? That's the interesting thing. Well, we had a court ruling yesterday. I'm not going to spend much time on this because honestly, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. And that's where we're going to find out the truth, or at least how this is going to be dealt with, whether you agree with it or not, of course, is another story. U.S. court ruling on Trump's tariffs fuels market uncertainty. Basically, they said he can't do them anymore. But they're not stopping them, so they will continue to be in effect for the future, as far as we know, until eventually this gets to the Supreme Court. Donald Trump is saying, hey, I want to fast track this. Let's get an answer. So we will hopefully have an answer there relatively soon. And I think like part of this is just understanding the process of all of it. Donald Trump has pretty wide power when it comes to tariffs. Does he have this much power in this widespread way? That's what they're going to look at there. And of course, it's been fascinating to watch the tariff conversation from the media's perspective, because for years and years and years and years and years, they kind of cheered it on. Like they liked tariffs. They thought they were a positive thing. They backed Barack Obama on his tariffs. Not Trump, of course. They don't like Trump's tariffs. Those are bad. Barack Obama's tariffs were awesome. And, you know, this is something that the left has been asking for a really long time. Now, when it comes to tariffs, you know, people get all fired up about it. I don't want to spend too much time on that. I want to look at the media's reaction, not just to tariffs, but also to the Intel deal. Now, Intel, in case you haven't followed that story closely, basically there was the CHIPS Act. That's what started all of this. The CHIPS Act was a left-wing priority, which was basically going to hand out a bunch of money to a bunch of companies to start producing chips here in the United States. I was against the CHIPS Act. I think it was a bad idea. That's the original sin of this story, right? The CHIPS Act was not a good idea, not the way things are supposed to operate here in the United States of America. I don't like the subsidizing stuff like this. I don't think it works. There's other things you can do, but this, to me, is the wrong answer. What's fascinating about that is the reaction as Donald Trump has stepped in to become president, because he can't really control whether the money goes to these companies or not. He is walled in by the CHIPS Act, which, as I mentioned, kind of the original sin of this story. Now, when it comes to where this has gone since, Donald Trump went to Intel and said, hey, you know, we're going to give you all this money. We should get a piece of the company. Because at the time he was critical of the CEO, they had their problems, and the CEO was like, I got to figure out a way to get myself out of this problem, and took a meeting with the president. This is where the Daily, and I listen to these things when I have to for you. Okay, so you don't have to listen to them. You're going to have to listen to some of it, though, today. Here is the Daily talking about this deal with Intel and how big of a deal it was.
There's no question that the decision by the administration to take a 10% stake in Intel is a watershed. It's a watershed not just for the world of business, but for the much larger idea around capitalism, around free markets, around the idea that the United States has spent the last century exporting the concept of free market capitalism and has been critical of state-run capitalism.
Yeah.
And in so many ways, even politically, this flips the entire script of the approach that Republicans and conservatives have taken towards business for so many years.
I mean, it does. I agree with that analysis, but it's funny to hear them talk about this from the New York Times, because throughout that period where we were doing that and praising free market capitalism and criticizing state-run capitalism, we were getting pushback from places like the New York Times over and over and over again. They were fighting for it, against us, for the state-run capitalism. And now that they perceive that Donald Trump is involved in it, now all of a sudden it's important to point out all the issues with it, which is fascinating. Here's a little clip about the meeting that led to this deal.
So the CEO goes to the White House, sits in the Oval Office with President Trump, and makes his case. And in the context of making his case for himself, for the company, the president has a suggestion. Well, you know, we're giving you all of this money. And by the way, there's still billions of dollars in grant money that has been allocated to you, but we have not sent the check yet. So you're going to still need that money. I think the U.S. government, given the fact that we're helping you so much, should own a piece of your company. The CEO, given, I think, all of the pressures around him, against him personally, and the pressure on the company and the pressure on the board, says, okay.
Wow.
And so the president then takes to Truth Social and says that we, the U.S. taxpayer, has just gotten 10% of the company. And he says that we got it for free.
I mean, did we get it for free?
It's a good question. Sort of. We had committed and allocated this money as part of the CHIPS Act to Intel. That money was supposed to go to Intel anyway. Intel now is justifying its decision to give the 10% in part because if you were to add up all of the dollars that the U.S. government had granted the company, it would buy you the equivalent of 10% of the company.
So it's a fascinating story. First of all, you know, this guy's trying to survive, right? He's in there and Donald Trump is doing what Donald Trump does. He's trying to make deals and trying to make deals, we should point out, that are better financially for the United States of America. There's no doubt about what he's doing here. He's saying, the original sin was the CHIPS Act, a bunch of money going to Intel. I disagree with that. But he's saying if we're giving it to them anyway, we should at least get something out of the deal. And that's why I think Trump keeps making the point of, like, how can anybody disagree with this? Like, we're giving the money anyway, and now we're getting something in return. So the issue, I think, advances, and part of the problem that you have with that here is, how does the U.S. government deal with Intel? Like, if they're trying to do a deal where they're buying chips, do they buy it from the company they own? What if it's not as good as another company, but like they have a loyalty to that company or an interest in that company succeeding? Do we purchase inferior chips from Intel as opposed to chips that are even better from a different company? How do you deal with that? I mean, we are at a point where the government is taking a rooting interest into the success of one particular company, which certainly many people over the years have made arguments for such a thing. Usually, though, it's that argument about picking winners and losers. And, you know, the right has traditionally been against that. So it goes into more of the conversation, sort of the setup of this, where we're trying to understand the thinking of Donald Trump, or we should point out the New York Times is trying to understand the thinking of Donald Trump. Watch.
On the other hand, Trump isn't running a company. He is the president of America. And the tools that he's doing to get leverage in these cases, the extent of the government intervention, that's just a pretty big departure from what you normally see in America. There isn't all that much precedent for this, as you've said.
There's almost no precedent for these kinds of deals in this country. There's precedent for them in China. There's precedent for them in Russia. There's precedent for them in France. But we've always been a country that has advocated for this idea of free market capitalism. Having said that, it's not exactly like free market capitalism is somehow the most popular concept in the world these days. And there are a lot of people who look at the idea of free market capitalism and say it's not working for them.
I mean, of course, there are a lot of people who say that. And of course, free market capitalism does not, and it never was designed to work the same way for every single person. There are people in our country who will not thrive under a free market system. Of course, what we see in opposing systems, state capitalism, all the way from to socialism to communism, is that more people tend to
to wallow in the despair of what those economies wind up producing. But it's fascinating to see them like, oh, we're just a country that loves free market capitalism. And now all of a sudden we're going against that. And their theory on Donald Trump is that he's so against the free market that he's trying to puncture the idea of it, trying to destroy the idea that free market capitalism even exists.
Donald Trump is puncturing the idea that free market capitalism ever existed. He's saying free market capitalism has actually been a myth, that the U.S. government has always been subsidizing all of these businesses in all sorts of different ways. And instead of pretending it's a free market and getting nothing for it, he's saying, give us something back for it. And that very idea in America is so provocative.
You could see how that would be a popular idea, right? It sounds like a great one. In fact, it sounds like such a great one that it has many supporters. A lot of people have been arguing for this type of thing for a long time. One of them is Bernie Sanders.
The real surprising part of this in Washington is just how the politics have almost flipped. So Bernie Sanders, for example, loves this idea. When the CHIPS Act was first put in place in 2022, folks like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders were specifically articulating the idea that we should be getting something for these big grants. So he's been out there for years advocating the idea that corporations should not be getting welfare, that all of these subsidies are bailouts, and that we shouldn't be involved in it. And if we are, we should be getting something for it. In a way, so much of what the president's doing is taxing corporate America, something the Democrats have long been advocating for.
And it's true. Bernie Sanders did wind up offering this amendment to the CHIPS Act, along with Elizabeth Warren. U.S. Senator Sanders favored Trump plan to take stake in Intel and other chip makers. This is back from the day Sanders and Senator Elizabeth Warren had proposed an amendment to the CHIPS Act that would have forbidden the Commerce Department from granting a CHIPS Act award without the Treasury Department receiving a warrant, equity stake, or senior debt instrument issued by the recipient company. So this has been an idea that has been popular for a while among the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warrens of the world. Trump, you can see what he's trying to do here. And I'm trying to think if he would actually advocate for this. I have not heard his position exactly on this, but I think it's similar to mine in that he would not have argued for the CHIPS Act at the time and would not have argued, I think, for this amendment at the time. What he's trying to do now is unwind the situation that it was created by Biden's CHIPS Act. He's trying to say, well, we can't stop this money from going out the door. So the best thing we can do is I can go in there, I can pressure these companies, and they'll give us something for it that is going to offset the money that's going out. And I think from a motivation standpoint, it's pretty clean. I think that's what Trump is trying to do here. I don't think he's trying to become a dictator. He's trying to become a socialist. He's trying to be a guy that takes over every company in America. I think he sees it as, look, it's wrong that this money's going out the door in the first place, but let's make the best out of a bad situation. I think that's where he stands. You know, you can drop it in the comments if you think I'm wrong on that. I don't necessarily think that's a good direction to go. I understand what he's doing there. And, I think there are other approaches I would prefer. This is Trump talking about, the changing of these, of the politics of these moments. And we've seen this happen. And it's okay that it happens. It's okay that Republicans start saying things that they said the opposite of before. I bring that stuff up a lot, and I always try to couch it in the fact that, like, it's okay for people to change their mind. There's two things that need to go along with that, though. One, it needs to be noticed, right? Two, there needs to be a really good explanation for it. Like, it shouldn't just be that all of a sudden we start arguing for the opposite thing. So it's more of a situation where you have to stop and think, hey, is this a situation that we want to change? And B, let's notice what we're doing here. We are changing this. We are now aligning ourselves with, Elizabeth Warren. Is that the right thing to do? Maybe she was right on this particular thing. And is there maybe a carve out? Because let's be honest about it. There's always a carve out. There's always a reason why this way is different. There's always that. You have to find those lines that are bright, though, to keep yourselves away from the troubles that could come down the road. Here's more from The Daily.
There's so many ways in which Trump's economic policies just don't fall within traditional party politics. Tariffs obviously being something that Republicans don't typically favor. And this, too, in a kind of dramatic way, because here you have one of the most progressive members of Congress saying, good, this is good.
You know, his approach really has pulled in a certain subset of Democrats who look at least some of his policies and say, yeah, that's what we should be doing. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, while much of the Republican establishment has, in truth, been pretty quiet about all this, they're not commenting on what the president's doing.
It's incredible. I mean, at some of these clips, it sounds like you're not talking to the New York Times, you're talking to the Cato Institute. Here they are talking about socialism.
You can't just be against socialism when the left does it. So if you support socialism, apparently Donald Trump is your guy.
If you are a free market capitalist, you do not want government investing in public companies. It may prioritize government goals as opposed to profit maximization.
The United States is the most dynamic economy in the world. They would argue that capitalism across the globe has raised people out of poverty. They would tell you that innovation comes from competition, not protectionism.
Yeah, all these things that are so fascinating that they're learning. Pulling people out of poverty, yeah, it has done that, I think, quite clearly. This, of course, is happening around the world. These types of deals do happen around the world. These are deals that, generally speaking, places like the New York Times, you know, like. They adore them in most conversations. Just, you know, they're now newly discovering capitalism and they're newly discovering their opposition to these types of deals.
Just to do a reality check here, as dramatic as these moves may be, there are plenty of other countries that own stakes in corporations that they think are important to national security. This happens in Europe. France and Germany have a stake in Airbus. I covered aerospace. That's a really successful company. And those countries are some of the biggest economies in the world.
Sure, but we've been critical of those countries for years for that approach, in large part because we look at their economy and we say that it doesn't grow nearly as fast as the United States. It's not nearly as dynamic.
Right.
You're not seeing the kind of innovation out of Europe that you've seen out of the U.S. over all of these years.
What?
Where's AI come from? Not Europe.
Huh.
Where did the internet come from? Not Europe.
Huh.
And so I think, sure, there are other places that have economies that work to some degree. But what's made the American experiment so successful has been this very idea of a quote unquote free market.
I mean, am I talking to Thomas Sowell here or is this the New York Times? They're finally discovering all these things we've been saying after all of these years. It really is amazing. All right. This is how the New York Times Daily podcast summed all this up.
Trump won two elections now on the argument that this economic system has not worked for a huge swath of people in this country, that people had been left behind, they had lost good factory jobs. And so I wonder if there aren't going to be people who look at this and say, sure, you may be kind of breaking the system, but that's what I voted for.
There's no question that many Americans voted for Trump to break the glass. That's what they wanted him to do. They wanted him to change the way this economy works. Now, whether they want these specific changes, I think, is still a big question.
That is the interesting part of all this, right? It's funny, being someone who's gone through and now covered two Trump terms, the fascinating part about it is when he's doing something that you absolutely love, it's fantastic, right? It's the best thing in the world. When he's doing something that maybe isn't in your interest set, it can at times be a little, I don't know how much I love that. Some of this recent economic stuff is, you know, not my bag, frankly. The border stuff on the other side of that, you know, the environmental stuff he's been doing, I think, has been really, really positive. Lots of really positive things. And obviously, we've seen and covered tons of them since he's become president. But there are areas in which things can improve. I think his economic plans at some level can be improved. Some of the taxes, some of the stuff that we're forcing through, I think, might not be the best approach. And in addition to that, the process is important. You have to do these things within the rules. I think we've had this issue with tariffs, certainly. I don't know if this is going to hold up in court, the Intel stuff. It might. It seems to be something that we have done at least at times of real crisis before, that's been kind of the separation point between this and previous instances where we've dove into this. You know, during the great financial crisis, we were doing the thing George Bush said. He said, we had to break capitalism to save capitalism. That was the justification. Now, we're not really in that point of saving capitalism with these moves, but you know, some of the same moves are happening anyway. So we kind of want to look at this entire picture and, you know, what's good, what is more on the shaky ground, what do you like, what don't you, with Pat Gray. He's going to join us next. Let's take a moment and talk about tea. Yes, you'd think tea would be very, very simple. It's like leaves, hot water, and you're done, right? That's what it's supposed to be. But somehow, you know, the tea that you're buying in stores is loaded with God knows what, all sorts of chemicals and who knows what. Kindred Harvest says, no thanks to that whole situation. They make actual, clean, all-natural tea blended right here, packed right here in the United States. Every batch is even third-party tested for lab-tested for safety. Now, whether you're, you know, want a morning pick-me-up, whether you want a caffeine-free evening blend, maybe a big pitcher of iced tea so that your kids can drink without, you know, growing gills, Kindred Harvest has something for you. It is honest, American-made tea. So if you're ready to upgrade from the chemical cocktail to actual comfort, it's time to try Kindred Harvest, the tea that's clean, calm, and completely on your side. Visit kindredharvest.co, kindredharvest.co. Use the code STU for 20% off. It's kindredharvest.co. Promo code is STU. It's Kindred Harvest, cultivating goodness daily.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mundt reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
I'm joined by Pat Gray, host of Pat Gray Unleashed right here on Blaze TV, and of course, the purveyor of Keksi cookies. You can check it out at keksi.com. Greatest cookies you're ever going to have. Pat, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I would also say, co-host of the Glenn Beck program this week.
Yes.
You are going to be filling in for Glenn with me tomorrow, with Jeffy on Friday.
Yeah.
So fabulous radio shows ahead.
Here all week?
Here all
try
week.
The veal.
Try the veal. The veal is delicious here at the studio. I will tell you that. We actually did today's radio show together as well. And we ended up on a conversation that I really wanted to have more time with you on, which is this intervention by Donald Trump into these cities around the country. Mm-hmm. And we have kind of three different ways this is playing out so far. You have initially the Los Angeles situation where he was intervening with some National Guard. There's been a legal ruling on that. They said he's not allowed to do that anymore. I'm sure that will go to the Supreme Court. You have the D.C. situation, which, of course, there's legal fights on that, I'm sure, as well. But it has a much more clear path to control over that. It's a federal district. Mm-hmm. He has 30 days to be able to do what he wants, basically, in a situation. And then finally, you have a potential of this expanding to many more cities like Chicago, Memphis, who knows where else. As you look at this as a whole, I mean, kind of go wherever you want. But as you look at it as a whole here, what are your feelings on these interventions?
I'm not a huge fan. I'm not a fan of it at all.
Okay, all right. So not a huge fan, but also not at all.
He was doing it right. And he just said yesterday, I think, that he was going to ask J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, to... have him send the National Guard. And then he proceeded to, which would be the right way to do it, but he proceeded to say, but I'm going to do it either way. I'm going to do it anyway, whether he agrees to it or not. That's just not the right way to do it. So I'm not a huge, huge fan of doing things in an unconstitutional way.
Well, let me start with the way that maybe is constitutional, which is D.C. What was your vibe on the D.C. intervention?
D.C. is a little bit different animal because it's not a state.
Yeah.
And so they can federalize there. So I, I didn't initially have a huge problem with that. I didn't think it was going to be a national every city kind of thing.
Right. I think that's where you run it. Because the D.C. part, I support. Right? Like, I think it's worked.
I did too. I did too.
It's been certainly a success. He has the right to do it. I think the arguments from the left on it were basically saying, well, crime's not that bad here, or it's not really an emergency. That was not persuasive to me at all.
No.
It's actually really bad there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to these other cities, I don't really understand the pathway yet. And maybe I haven't followed it closely. Maybe he hasn't explained it great. The L.A. one was very borderline to me. The courts didn't seem to like it.
Yeah.
But it was very limited time. And there was some argument that it was okay. It had been done a couple times in the past. Is that right?
Yeah.
But, you know, Chicago seems to be another situation entirely.
And so is Baltimore. And so those are problematic. And, you know, with the local authorities opposing it so vehemently and the fact that he's just doing it regardless, I think is an issue. And I'd like to see him not do that.
Yeah.
Frankly, we've got enough problems as it is with him getting his agenda done without actually adding fuel to their fire that deserves to be fuel to their fire. You know, this just plays into the whole dictator thing.
Right. OK, so this is the left says he's Hitler, says he's a dictator, says all he wants to do.
Yeah.
Is that a big part of your opposition to this, that it kind of plays into their hands?
That and the fact that it's unconstitutional, which I think we should also consider.
Well,
start there.
I come from a place where every time we would talk about anything like this, you'd hear posse comitatus.
Yes.
Every caller would say the same thing.
Yes.
That does not seem to be much of a concern on this.
It really doesn't. I haven't even, and I expected it. I haven't even heard the left claim it. Maybe they're not smart enough to know about it. I don't know. But
the right, it was the ones that was always claiming it to us. Like, they call into the show and they would say it all the time. Anytime there was any federal, you know,
intervention at all. Yeah.
Right. It was always talking about that. That does not seem.
That's what they've always said at the border, too, is posse comitatus. No, we're not using it against American citizens. We're keeping foreigners out. So to me, the border is legitimate, but sending them to every American city, Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, I don't know, where does that end?
I think, so stepping back from this a little bit, maybe just talking generally, because I think both of us would agree, there's been a lot of really good things that have happened during the Trump administration.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The border is maybe number one I would point to. I mean, a massive decrease in the crossings on the border. There's been a lot of really great things. His energy policies, I think, have been great. We talked about the EPA a little bit on the radio show today. Like, they just released a report from five respected scientists that put climate change in an actually accurate sort of picture, which we haven't seen in a long, long time. So tons and tons to be happy about, and we shouldn't dissolve that. But I think, like, if my issue with some of the stuff that Trump does is he is not at all concerned about process. Like, we would all agree that cracking down on crime in these communities is really important. And there probably are ways the federal government can help with that, can guide that, can intervene in some ways as well. But it doesn't seem like top of his mind to do it the right way. And that's why I think the courts are both activists against him, but also this is part of the reason why they keep slapping him down, because he kind of makes it easy at times, at least the people around him do.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And he's done a few things recently that deserve some criticism. And we're not supposed to criticize him if we're on the right. But I can't help it.
Right.
Because it's not right. This and the 600,000 Chinese students, I don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
We've already got way too much espionage happening from Chinese nationals in America, in corporate offices or in colleges, that they've already stolen so much American tech. It's really how they've progressed to where they are right now. And now we're going to make it even easier for them. I don't get it. And I don't agree with that either. So there's a couple of issues on which I really disagree with him right now.
Yeah, and I think, like, I don't know the process argument on that one as well. The tariff is another, tariffs are another thing.
Like, tariffs.
Those got knocked down in courts. Again, I don't even bother talking about those things because we all know they're going to the Supreme Court eventually. Mm-hmm. It's sort of pointless to talk about every little court twist and turn. But like one of the examples I keep coming up with on that is like the president does have authority on tariffs the way that we currently understand the Constitution. Now, it's not my way of understanding the Constitution. I don't like tariffs. The Constitution quite clearly says Congress is supposed to be doing these things. We've allowed, and the courts have allowed, for some of that authority to be handed over to the president. They didn't allow for all of the authority to be handed over to the president. There are situations where these things are supposed to be applied. They're supposed to be applied on specific items from specific nations under specific circumstances after studies and all this crap that, you know, and he just like, screw it. We're going to do it through a totally separate law that doesn't even mention tariffs. And we're going to see what happens. And I think like that type of stuff, while a lot of times it feels really good because you usually like the outcome of it. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it gets him in trouble. And I think it does set his agenda back at the same time he's trying to move it forward.
Yeah. And that's the problem. It just makes his entire presidency more difficult because, you know, it gives some legitimacy. The Democrats have virtually no legitimacy.
Right.
So for him to lend them any is it's disturbing. I wish he wouldn't.
Another thing that the right has some issues with the president on was on his AI agenda. He came out with this big speech and he basically was saying, we need to encourage AI here. We need to, put money into it. We need to invest into it. We need to make circumstances as positive as possible for mm-hmm. these AI companies, because we want to own that business, which is an understandable and probably laudable goal in a lot of ways. In a lot of other ways, though, like AI isn't the thing that inspires the right, I would say, the most. Like, I think people are scared of AI. They think it's annoying. They think it's not as wonderful as everyone else seems to think. Mm-hmm. And they're worried about the effect it has on the culture, on families, on the community, on schools. Where do you land on that?
Both worried and excited about it, yeah. I think, like a lot of people. I mean, the potential for it is amazing, but the potential for bad is pretty frightening. And one of the things I see almost every day is that it's just flat out wrong sometimes. And I think a lot of people are just misled by accepting what AI has spit out for them and just going with it.
Yeah,
I think we're going to run into some problems with that because it can be just flat out wrong.
Yeah. I noticed this with people I talk to where it'll be like a complicated life situation. You know, mm-hmm. we're dealing with a relative who's having this problem and they'll go to ChatGPT. And when you talk to them, they'll say, well, ChatGPT said I should do this. And it's like, gosh, I don't, that's not really what I think it's designed even for.
No, it's not.
It's great for directions on fixing things.
Yeah.
You know, it does some things incredibly well.
It's great to gather information quickly because, you know, it's scanning thousands of websites in half a second, mm-hmm. and then it gives you an aggregate answer from those sources. But sometimes those sources are wrong or it doesn't look hard enough. And it's interesting because I just had a conversation with an AI last night about how is it lazy? Because we've heard lots of times, I think you and Glenn have talked about it on the show, one of the problems with AI is that it's lazy.
Mm. How do you mean?
It won't dig deep enough in some cases,
yeah.
or it'll see something that it perceives as an answer and give that to you and the answer is wrong, rather than really doing some deeper research. One of the things it admitted to being lazy from a human perspective, but it said, of course, I don't have human characteristics.
Right, right.
So it's not laziness, it's cost effectiveness was one of the reasons, because it takes so much power and, so much energy to come up with these answers that sometimes it just devotes less time to that. And so it just accepts
That's
something.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Except the easy thing.
I was surprised, but it was like, oh, okay. So you would, first of all, you admit to the problem. Secondly, that's, an interesting problem that we have. And yeah. need to address.
I've noticed that as well. Like, I'll look, you know, again, I like playing with it, I like trying to understand it. You know, I know it's a big, I don't love dealing with it on a day-to-day basis, but occasionally I'll play with it. And one of the things I had, you know, sometimes I'll ask it a question like, you know, hey, I'm looking for a study on this. What does it show or whatever? And it'll give me this answer that's like, not great. And at the end, it'll say, would you like me to look at studies based on this? And I'm like, well, yeah, that was the whole point.
Right. Like, yes. Why didn't you do that laziness. In the first place?
Yeah, just
do it. Of course,
that's
what I want.
Of course, that's what I want. Yeah. I will say, I was in my wife's car the other day, and suddenly, out of nowhere, her car turned on the feature where when you stop at a stoplight, it just turns the car off.
Oh, yeah.
And then you let the foot off the brake and it turns it back on.
Right.
Like the worst feature that has ever been created. By the way, thank you, Barack Obama. That's your fault. Trump has reversed that, by the way. Another thing we can definitely laud him on when it comes to his presidency. So it somehow just started turning on every time she turns on the car. And I don't know where this feature is. Like, I don't know how to turn it on or off. Is it a software update?
Yeah.
Now, in the olden days, you would go to Google, maybe. You'd go to the manual of the car, try to find where this button was. How long would that take? Even asking ChatGPT, for example, is kind of arduous, right? It gives you this like, well, it could be here, it could be here, it could be here. The best way to use this stuff is by taking a picture. I took a picture of the center console. I said, where's the button? And it said, oh, in that car, it's actually not there. It's on the left side of the steering wheel. Took a picture of the left side of the steering wheel. Where's the button? It's the third one on the left. Press it off, totally fine.
Wow.
Like, like that's how a human would tell me how to solve that problem.
Yeah.
And it does. So it is really useful.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. One of the examples of it just being completely wrong, I was interested to see one of BYU's big targets was the quarterback who's five-star quarterback.
Yeah.
Ryder Lyons is his name, and he committed to BYU. So anyway, I was trying to find out his statistics for this season because he's a senior in high school this year.
Okay.
So I asked AI, what are Ryder Lyons? Pretty easy, right?
That
what are his stats?
Yeah.
Ryder Lyons isn't playing this year. He's on a mission for the church. Like, no, he's not. He's a senior in high school, and he's played two games already. So.
Wow, that's weird.
Where did it even come up with that?
Like, it's just creating it out of whole cloth.
He's going to go on a mission next year, but it didn't tell me that. That's it said he's currently on. So, just laziness, or I don't know what.
I will say, ChatGPT wrong all the time, AI wrong all the time, still more accurate than the actual media.
that's true.
Somehow it's still hitting at least that standard. Pat Gray, he's host of Pat Gray Unleashed. He is, of course, the master. He's not really the master. Honestly, it's his wife who's the genius at Pepsi Cookies. She's the one doing the actual work, but he also shows up and eats them occasionally.
I do that.
Keksi.com, KEKSI.
Did you notice?
I did. I heard you have some mini cake situation going on.
Breads? Yeah, they're mini loaves of bread and delicious, but they're sold out. Sorry. Once again,
you're the worst.
You're talking about them. They're already sold out.
I always hear about these things after they come out, and I want to try them, and then you go to the website and they're not there.
Yeah, I'll let you know. We're going to have a Christmas cookie. You might want to order that right now because it's not.
Now?
Yeah.
What cookie is it?
I don't know, but there will be one.
Well, there you go. Future cookie talk here on the program. KEKSI is the place to go to get those. And of course, we'll be on radio together again tomorrow, so check that out. Pat, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
So, lots of stuff going on. And, you know, a lot of times there are so many new things going on that we miss a chance to look back at what we were talking about a few months ago to see if it actually worked. One of the things we've argued for and have praised Donald Trump for was his, I think, appropriate desire to have people, you know, show up for work. if we're going to pay them, maybe they should actually come to the office. This is a crazy, crazy idea. Now, of course, there's some employees that can work remotely without an issue, but that's definitely not the case with everybody. And people were really just manufacturing a fake fear of COVID multiple years after people were really worried about it and just staying home. And they were like, well, we're going to keep this going as long as this gravy train runs. And then Donald Trump got elected and said, no more. Get back to work. So did that work? Well, yeah, according to Axios, it did. Trump's return to office order worked. Here's the graph that they're talking about. What you see here in the Chartapalooza here on Studios America, you're seeing two lines that are moving in big ways since Trump got into office. Number one, the blue line. Number two, the red line. The blue line are hybrid employees, employees that came in occasionally, now are coming in almost all the time. Much, much more often. So the on-site workers have gone from about 20% of the workforce to about 46%. And the hybrid employees have dropped from 60% down to 28%. Interestingly, the full-time remote employees has actually sort of increased from when Trump took over by a very, very slight percentage. No drop-off, I guess, is the more interesting part of that. Those are the people who, if they're fully remote, maybe they just really can be fully remote. It's not going to bother anybody. But it was the hybrid employees that were more of the problem. So it does seem like that has been successful. And you got to have people in the office, so they can come in and churn out the AI slop while they're at the office rather than at home, because that's really important. Now, we were talking about AI a little bit earlier on the program. It's funny because these companies had all these employees, you know, like say graphic artists. And they fired a bunch of them because they had AI now, and they just had to churn out the AI every day. They didn't need to pay anybody. Now they're finding they need to hire the graphic artists back. Why? Because the AI sucks. At least so far. I think it's going to keep improving, but humans are being hired to make AI slop look less sloppy. In the age of automation, human workers are being brought in to fix what artificial intelligence gets wrong. So, you know, they're churning out pictures of people with like 19 fingers, and then editors have to come in and be like, okay, let's trim that down to say five, maybe six, five or six fingers. That's plenty. So they're working on that right now. And AI, I think, has done some really good things. We were talking about that a little bit with Pat. Has some interesting negatives. The other day I was at a drive-through with my son. He wanted Panda Express. Big Asian food. This kid loved Asian food more than anything. And we're at Panda Express, and you might say that's not exactly authentic Asian food, but you know, I never look down on fast food options. I'm not going to talk negatively about them. But he really likes the orange chicken that he's getting there, and he ordered orange chicken. And then he corrected it. It was a side or maybe he wanted the honey walnut shrimp as well. So we pull up and an AI voice comes on like, please order. So he orders and then he's like, actually, no, make it half orange chicken and half walnut shrimp. So he starts it. The order comes up all orange chicken and he changes the order in the middle. And the AI actually recognizes that he changed it, updates the order, doesn't screw it up. Has it perfectly right and everything comes out correctly. Now, most times I go to fast food restaurants with humans, it doesn't come out correctly. So I was pretty impressed by that, though it is not exactly infallible, as Taco Bell has found out. Taco Bell is rethinking its AI drive-thru after a man ordered 18,000 waters. Now, if you try to order 18,000 waters to a human, they will eventually just tell you to shut up and move on. The AI is not going to do that. It's just going to tell you what you want to hear. And that's the problem with AI. There's a lot of great benefits about it, but there's the problem with AI is we'll always kind of give you a version of the reality that you want. And that has really screwed up a bunch of people's lives. And I think we'll screw up our society at a larger level as we go forward if it's not corrected. Now, look, Taco Bell, I'm fine. If Taco Bell can get me the tacos and continue to make them in the delicious way that they do, I'm going to be fine with the AI. But you do have to watch out for these issues. And if you want 18,000 waters with your order, you may need to actually talk to a human being to get them. Give me a second to give you a quick plug for Blaze TV. Blaze TV exists, of course, because you are done with watered down coverage, spin and clickbait that misleads. And if you haven't listened to the show on podcast or on YouTube or on Pluto TV, you might not have thought about a Blaze TV subscription. You're already getting the show, but it's bigger than that. It's bigger than one voice or one company. It is a group of people who will not sit on the sidelines. It's part of a movement. And if you want to plant a flag with us, subscribe. And it helps, of course, keep the lights on here and keeps truth on the air now and for the next generation. But it gets you involved as well. And it's really hard for conservative voices to get out there and get the message that they want to get out to the people. So go to StuDoesAmerica.com, StuDoesAmerica.com. Get you access to the entire network at $20 off the price right now on the annual plan. As low as $8 a month, StuDoesAmerica.com.